Special coverage from the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference is brought to you by Victoria Gold Corp.
Welcome back to the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Welcome back to SOAR Financially. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JRMiningGuy on Twitter and the CEO of the SOAR Financially Group. Really appreciate you joining us here. If you haven't done so, hit that subscribe button because we've got a fantastic discussion coming up. We're hosting a roundtable here at this conference, and I'm really thankful to Jay Martin and all these guys putting it on because they've brought out some fantastic keynote speakers to the event, and we get to reap the benefits because we get to interview them. And I'm really excited to welcome Danielle DiMartino-Booth over at QI Research and Matt Piepenberg, partner over at Von Kreyatsgold. I still need to get used to that name because you just changed it. Fantastic. Really appreciate you guys joining us. And I think we have a 20-minute discussion coming up here about the state of the economy, what is happening, but also let's try forecasting a little bit. It's still, you know, January 21st, so we're allowed to do that a little bit. And let's talk about it. Let's maybe start with the Fed. I think it's always dominating the headlines. Maybe as a triggering question, should the Fed dominate the headlines?
In Bank of America's latest global investment survey, manager survey, whatever the hell it is, in their latest survey, the Fed is 56% in terms of what are the most critical drivers of markets this year. And 56% was the overwhelming winner of the Fed being most important.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
Which in and of itself is a problem. In a sense, it's such a centralized capitalism, if you want to call it that. Because, and to simplify it a bit more, when the Fed is hawkish or the Fed is dovish, the markets are bearish or we're, you know, more bullish. It's no longer even a thermostat dial, it's a switch. The Fed policy is so determinant in what the markets do. Even the promise of projected rate cuts got markets galvanic and giddy and hot and bullish.
Yep.
You're so far from the plow of fundamentals and old-fashioned supply and demand and balance sheets and most importantly, cash flow and all these things that should...
Most importantly, cash flow. Regent required here.
And yet, you know, and then there's the question of how many rate cuts. And of course, the markets are always projecting that aggressively, I think. Probably too aggressively. Well, get your thoughts on.
Yeah, I think that the Powell is less market friendly and more nonpartisan than people appreciate. I think he wanted to get out in front of the Iowa caucuses, and in order to do that, the Iowa caucuses were on January the 15th. That opened the floodgates to election season. And his only opportunity to do that was at the mid-December FOMC meeting, because he didn't meet until after Iowa and New Hampshire. So I think he wants to be projected as being apolitical. I think markets really ran away with themselves. And that's one of the reasons he had all of these Fed speakers, walk it back, especially Waller, with careful and measured moves, meaning like, can they possibly really be planning on only 0.75% rate cuts? I mean, it is nothing. It's nothing in the context of how expensive commercial real estate is to try and refinance, how much equity you have to bring to the table, this corporate refinancing wall of maturity that we're going to slam into for the first time in 40 years. So, I mean, there's a lot of really crazy stuff going on in markets that unless you've been doing this for 50 years, you haven't seen.
Well, it's quite symbolic. 0.25% doesn't change anything. And the lag effect it takes for it to trickle into the system anyway, is takes forever as well.
Shrinking the balance sheet.
Yeah. So sounds like you're more in the cap of 6-7 maybe rate cuts as well this year. No. Like the market predicts, you're actually didn't laugh. Oh, I'm curious. Okay, no, that's why we're having a roundtable discussion, right?
Well, I think, again, the markets are always exuberant wanting to, and look at what they did last year, projected. Even me, when the regional banking crisis started, I expected some type of reaction. I was wrong, generally. You look at the signal moves in the short end of the yield curve in early 2020, people have forgotten what was going on the two-year yields and those crazy moves that PhDs over at MIT would happen once every 50 million years, and that's just no bid and ask. But I think, and again, I don't want to try, and you'll have some interesting insights on this. I don't see 6-7, could be wrong. I don't see anything necessarily until probably May, could be wrong. But even if we see anything, it's probably 2-3. And I do think there will be rate cuts this year. I don't think he's bluffing. I think, again, the $740 billion in corporate bonds on the S&P that have to reprice, they need lower rates. The 30% of the U.S. Treasuries that reprice in the next 36 months, they need lower rates. So the SAM needs lower rates. Corporate America needs lower rates. I think the election year, the $840 billion in commercial banks that they have to repay, refinance, and they pay back the bailout they've got from, you know, two ETFP program. So a lot of reasons why lower rates are important, not just an election year. And I do think between corporate America and Uncle Sam, Powell has hit that wall, I think, with higher rates. You know, they say that usually you take the elevator up and it stairs down, but it was very fast up and now it's slower down. And I think Powell is throwing the towel before he hit target 2%. And I think it's because we're going to get that Vista dominance. Whenever we have real rates of 2% or more, the bond market literally cannot handle positive real rates.
Danielle, were you surprised how clear Powell was in his speech? You mentioned backpedaling afterwards. That was very obvious that he maybe got ahead of himself, because as an observer, I do a lot of interviews, so I observe, of course, how clear he was in his message.
He was, and, you know, the data on job openings has turned so violently, and he was really relying on that. The fact that TRUflation, TRU, which is a 97% correlation with the headline CPI, it leads it, but like really tight trend, almost perfect correlation. The fact that it's broken south of 2%, the Fed is, and I think Powell knows that they could actually have a problem on their hands because there's so much downside momentum right now in inflation. All of the inflationistas and inflation's going to be sticky on the way down. Without marginal fiscal support, and we've really had the last of that with the putting on the employee retention credit, putting that on ice in mid-September. The reason TRUflation broke was hotel rates have come down. It's hard.
And that's, not in Vancouver.
Well,
I paid attention to that.
But they are coming down, and that's kind of your last gasp is services spending. But U.S. households, they're tapping out.
We're seeing that. Like, I've been in New Orleans at the conference where we talked. Bullion dealers mentioned that people are cashing out their gold to pay daily expenses, things like that. It's a bit drastic, but it shows. And I was in the U.S. over the weekend as well, and radio spots were saying, in these economic challenging times. Like, I've never heard a radio spot saying that. I think it was for a car insurance company mentioning that in a radio spot, and everybody's still denying economic turmoil, right?
I mean, there was a survey out last week that found that 45% of Americans are concerned about losing their job, up from 37% a year prior. Once you are concerned about losing your paycheck, that's why I keep trying to explain to people that there's a problem with shipping rates. The problem with shipping rates is only as problematic as pricing power. Because if households can't afford it, and one earnings report after another is saying, we cannot make these price hikes stick, which means we're going to lay off 25% of our workforce. And most of these earnings reports are being accompanied by layoff announcements. Because one way or another, they've got to try and get back to having a positive bottom line, and we're not there.
Well, as usual, I'm always trying to find myself translating Powell speak. And I'm particularly, you know, the personalities of the Fed better than anyone. And it's in fact, and you could probably spend stole by teaching their personalities. It'd be fascinating to do. In my cynical view, it could be wrong, but my cynical view, even the way they tried to take, the BLS, what they do with labor, what they do with CPI, to me is a whole exercise. And I think, again, Bernanke should have got the Pulitzer Prize for fiction, or the Nobel Prize for fiction. But even the 200 new jobs, again, how do you really manipulate that data with the 1.5 million lost jobs, 700,000 part-time? It's how you manipulate the data that really it's messaging over reality and lofty words over really bad math. And I think that also goes into the inflation debate and in the recession, non-recession, hard landing. So they're all tied together. But what is the true numbers? And you can look at the hard landing evidence. You talk about that. I'm curious what you think. What's the confidence building indicators? What's the empty money supply rate? 4% decrease. Always disinflationary, deflationary, recessionary, depressionary. The layoffs at Spotify, Google, the bankruptcies in 2023, to me, they're all individual signs of a hard landing. And then there's I call it the Oliver Anthony indicator, this guy in Farmville, Virginia. I keep reading 100 million hits in 4 months just because he sings a middle-class pain. Severe job loss. When you have 400 plus bankruptcies in a year, there are job losses associated with it. So you've got to make all this.
So job hoarding is sort of over with. Like one theme was like, we're not laying anybody off because we can't find anybody. We need them again.
A buddy of mine posted a position on Indeed.com and got 100 applicants in 72 hours. I mean, there is, and you're seeing entire college classes come out and not be able to find jobs. So this is really, really serious business. And households are finally getting wise to the fact that they're not just being lied to about what I call latent inflation.
Yeah.
And that's that a gallon of milk is still way more than it was before they closed the economy. So they still see it, even though there's very dangerous disinflationary winds blowing as labor slack opens up, because that's your company's most important, biggest line item for costs, expenses. Even as you're seeing that, I think Americans are finally getting wise to the fact that they're being lied about when it comes to the job market.
There's a YouTube video. I think Lance Roberts mentioned it in an interview with our friend Adam Taggart just on Friday, where a young kid apparently sent out like 1,400 resumes like virtually to companies. He got zilch in response. And that video just went viral.
Yeah.
That sort of speaks exactly what you're mentioning, right? And either too many people applying, or they're just not, the jobs don't exist, right? There might be openings, but the jobs don't exist.
Don't talk about very often. We talk about the refinancing wall of maturity and publicly traded corporate debt. Small and medium enterprises in the United States are more levered than large companies. And and they employ a lot more people, and they're going out of business left and right. I mean, it's extremely problematic, I think, that we're in an election year, because they're going to do everything that they can to try and hold what you were describing, the narrative.
Well, I'm curious with you, and I really want to get your perspective, because I could be too cynical. I think there's a lot of sensationalism in our industry, and I want to always try not to do that. But yet I'm very cynical. Well, it's a philosophical. I really tend to believe the opposite of what Fed officials say, and the track record and so forth. In a sense of his war on inflation, which I have lots of theories on his war on inflation, but okay, you're going to get deflation when you raise rates that fast, and you butcher them the class the way you've done it. It's not necessarily an accomplishment in a Volcker heroic. In a sense, do you wonder, A, did Powell do too much to fight inflation on the back of the middle class and not on the back of the markets? That the markets, of course, suffer with rising rates. But is he too successful? Is he not even? He's only in chapter one of this game. Because I do think the inflation-deflation debate does not end just because of what the CPI scale says. Whatever you think of that scale,
mm-hmm.
where we are now. And again, I'd love to get your perspective. I see inflation-deflation not as zero-sum, but cyclical. And that this inflation-deflation discussion is far from over. The end game. And this is stealing from Luke Roman and from the St. Louis Fed in June, and Charles Salomaris, if I pronounce that right. But this fiscal dominance argument isn't just an interesting theory. I think it's inevitability. Because I do that, and you could have a different view, and I think it's good if you do, because I'd love to unpack that, because I think with the amount of U.S. treasuries we're going to have to issue, and the Congressional Budget Office, the next 10 years, $20 trillion more IOUs are coming out. Who's going to be buying those U.S. treasuries if they're not going to be monetized by the Fed? And they're not going to get that from taxes. So not all of it's going to be money printed money by it. But to me, that's a highly inflationary end game to pay Uncle Sam's IOUs.
I mean, on a practical level, the problem is that as bad off as we are, the rest of the world is very worse.
Yep.
I mean, you had Italy and France have negative month over month inflation prints before the United States had its first negative month over month. Inflation print. It is killing France. The U.S. tourists have run out of funny money from Uncle Sam. And it's showing up, and nobody's paying attention to the fact that the second largest economy in Europe's in recession.
Well, the largest, too.
No, literally.
Officially. Like, I think we skated off in a technicality, because our GDP growth last year was negative 3.3%. But apparently, we're not in a recession. So.
Yeah.
Based on technicality, I've yet to find out what it was, but.
Painting to watch the German GDP data come out. It's just fascinating.
But to your point,
BASF is pushing forward with layoffs, and I'm like, because the German economy is strong.
Exactly.
So those are very disinflationary forces global, because everyone's doing bad at the same time. We have a multipolar, multi-currency context. I don't think it's the end of US dollar world, but everything's bad everywhere. And that's very disinflationary and global one. And because of that, there's still the need to maintain yields in every market, bond market, especially in the U.S. market. And to maintain those yields, someone has to buy those unwanted IOUs, whether that's the Deutsche Bund or the U.S. Treasury. And to me, that's not going to come from natural buyers, household buyers, including hedge funds. It's going to have to come from a central bank. That's going to be at the kind of levels which, and there's liquidity, and there's reserves, and there's a TGA, and there's a reverse repo. There's always trillions available. But the trillions necessary to keep yields from spiking, or to keep the bond market, which it will not default. U.S. Treasury will not default. Well, so it's the kind of spending we're going to be doing fiscally and what's already budgeted without even baking in a recession. I don't see how we deal around that with what Luke calls super QE or I call mega QE. And that may be sensational, but that's how I see it. And it's not tomorrow. It's not tomorrow. In the meantime, we have a very strong disinflationary force in our face, and real strong, but it's not the end.
Where do you see bond yields go? I'm curious. I had Simon Hunt on the program. He said, 10% by the end of the year again. And like, not again, but 10% by the end of the year. And now we're at 4.2% for the 10-year?
If you're pretty darn certain that we're going to have big spenders in the next administration, which could be current occupant or the prior occupant, and if you're pretty certain that Congress is going to go along, then I do think you see a backup in yields. And that will be very, very... You'll get your capitulation out of your markets if that's the case, because you'll be doing it into shrinking paychecks.
And again, what really can we theoretically argue where yields could go, and without yield curve control, before everything breaks but the Dow, yields spike that level. The 10-year goes to that level. How does Uncle Sam pay for that? How does corporate America pay for that? How does...
They don't.
So they're going to... Then we could speculate on Bretton Woods or a Plaza Forge or some other new reshuffle of the deck chairs of the Titanic, but we don't have the luxury to speculate on those kind of yields because we can't afford them. So something has to happen, in my view. And that will have to either be blatant yield control or some blaming on bad guys, Martians, marshmallows, whatever you want, another virus. They'll need a narrative to justify it. And then they'll need an heir to print money to monetize to control this. Yeah. So it'll be the question, save the currency, save the bond market throughout history, always save the system at the expense of the currency. That's, again, why we probably both own a lot of gold.
Yep.
And we also have, I know I was listening, we have kids to put through school, we have to get liquidity. And so we still own a lot of gold. But reality is, I think the currency is going to suffer, as it always does throughout history, when countries, regimes, democracies, empires, monarchies get over their schism back. Through some mechanization events, currency sacrificed, saved the bond, whether it's a JGB, a Bloomberg, an IOU, U.S. Treasury. And that's the long-term reason why I think gold wins. And gold can win in a strong dollar, weak dollar, high yields, low yields, but gold's decoupling from the fundamentals of its usual good case, bad case scenarios, because there's so much dysfunction in the bond market. The bond market is a thing. And to me, you have a debt crisis. This is by Mises or David Hume. Debt destroys nations. Once you have a debt crisis, you have a bond crisis, a sovereign bond crisis. Then you have a currency crisis. Then you have social unrest and more centralized central banking.
One of my four children will probably be fluent in Mandarin. But right now, I don't see. Biggest problem right now is that the rest of the world is weak.
Yeah.
The biggest problem by far. That the U.S. government, that the U.S. GDP has actually become a more dominant superpower economically than we were prior to the pandemic. When it looked like China might end up being bigger than the U.S. economy, it's gone in the opposite direction.
Yeah, they actually had lower growth than we did this year.
They do, and their economies actually been shrinking.
And look, the Melchick theory, poor Brent Johnson, I beat up on them, but I agree with them 99% of the stuff. And thank God for the milkshake theory. And let's not kid ourselves. The amount of FX trades have been in the U.S. dollar.
87%?
It's massive. And in the SWIFT system, dollar percentage has risen. Let's also not forget that 80%, I think, of GDP or 80% of all trade sales is in the U.S. dollar. 70% of GDP measuring U.S. dollar. Collateralization, $100 trillion banking market. Collateralization, U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar is not going anywhere. U.S. economy is not the worst in the world. It's probably still, ironically, the strongest force in the blue factory. But this is... It doesn't mean I'm end of the world reserve currency, end of the dollar, end of the milkshake theory. But I do think we still can't deny it. Although we are relatively stronger in the VXY or the currencies and the yen and the ruble and the Swiss franc that you want are not going to replace the U.S. dollar, there is an important theme of de-dollarization to talk about. And I do think that straw sucking on demand in this dollar is very powerful in the euro dollar markets, river markets, even the petrodollar market. It's just shakier, but not the end. Despite that, there is not that same straw for the U.S. Treasury. And if there isn't, and we're going to be issuing more IOUs and issuing more debt, and new central banks are dumping treasuries and buying gold, who's going to be buying those U.S. treasuries? Again, that's my thesis, that eventually that need to monetize our own IOUs is going to ultimately be inflation. And then we will not allow you to go to 10% because we
can't afford it, right? So we're sort of wrap up the conversation.
Absent a credit event, I don't think that Jay Powell is the one running the central bank when that happened.
Yeah.
Well, he might be finance minister or somebody mentioned on Reuters. He might show up on the ballot. So, I don't know.
It's going to be the most.
I think it was a Reuters opinion piece or something. It was like, so. But to wrap up the conversation, we're here at an investment conference, heavily commodity focused, obviously. But what are some of the advice you'll be giving on stage? I know you have yet to present and join a panel. So I'm curious, what's some of the advice here, given what we just discussed?
So I think... I've been saying this, and I think that there will be long-term opportunities to be exploited with a new presidency in Mexico. There's a lot of updating that needs to be done in Mexican infrastructure. And in addition to that, you've got promise demographically of Indians. So I think that long-term, here we are not at the advent of a new commodity supercycle, period, end. But I think that long term, that those two countries are going to be real pockets of opportunity.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, I'm completely from that as I watched when I interviewed you. I think you make brilliant sense on the commodities for a second. Not yet. Especially we're in a global recession. It's not the demand for commodities right now. The demographics favor India, China, Mexico longer term after the part of a global recession, which I think we're in. But it doesn't mean we're having a super cycle now. And, you know, we all know Ronnie Sterpley has a great chart. He called the chart of the decade on the S&P and commodities and then one second lens. Probably a little bit against the other. I don't think we're there yet in commodities broadly, grain and others. With the commodity that I love, which, of course, I have a massive bias, but I think it's conviction. Precious metals are a different kind of commodity. They're a monetary metal.
Mm-hmm.
Just a typical.
I'd agree with that.
And again, for me, it wins either way now. It's disconnected from the old arguments. Strong dollar, weak dollar, high rates, low rates. Because I do believe my central long-term thesis and short-term thesis is irrelevant to me where the DXY is relative to other currencies, the US dollar, its inherent purchasing power gets weaker because we're going to have to monetize our debt. What $100 bought you last year will be less than it'll buy you next year, regardless where the DXY goes relative to other currencies, and that yes, I'm biased for that price as well. So in terms of investment, I still favor foreign old physical solid gold, not as an appreciation asset, but as a wealth preservation asset.
The ultimate edge.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Danielle, Matthew, thank you so much for your time and really appreciate the conversation. Where can we find more of your work?
QI Research. I'd love to have you. Come to dmartinobooth.substack.com and follow me on Twitter at dmartinobooth.
Fantastic. Matthew, I know you're not on Twitter, so.
So not to use the cell phone, like I said, but no, we actually still be fine at goldswitzerland.com, but we have a new name or entity as of this week. We changed it in honor of our founder, Egon von Greyers, who at bondgreyers.gold. Or VG.gold or goldswitzerland.com. So all our articles and interviews are there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. And to everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. We're here at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. We got lots more great content coming up from this conference. Leave a comment, leave a like. What do you think is happening? Are we in a disinflationary scenario, inflationary? Is it rebounding? Are you scared? Let us know. Thanks so much. We'll be back with more.